Hello, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. Welcome back. I am here every Monday night, 7 to 8 p.m. on WAUK, 540 a.m., 101 FM. As you know, we've been on for a year now, and we are here primarily to talk about how to continue to move Wisconsin forward. What are we going to do to make sure democracy stays alive? What are we going to do, and what can we, each of us, do together to make this a better place for our, not only ourselves, but our kids and our grandkids? I know last Monday, it was really like a fun Monday because we're all celebrating the Packers crushing the Vikings. But tonight we are here at the end of a Packer season. But I am very, very fortunate to have Senator Chris Larson with me. And we're going to talk about what the Senate and the Democrats are going to do to try to make Wisconsin a better place, even though the Republicans and frankly, the far right Republicans still control too much of our lives. So welcome, Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mark. Happy to be here. Good to be back.
Awesome. Awesome. Is it okay if I call you Chris, or do I need to call you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, save some time. We could do that.
Well, I appreciate it. But, you know, I got to ask, right?
Yeah. I've been Chris before I was senator. I'll be Chris after.
That's right. You know, I'm just a lawyer. I'm just sitting here, right? But hey, let's start out. We have one of the biggest items on the table is we have $6.5 billion sitting on the table that it needs to be allocated for the public. So how do you see this issue? Where's the money going to go? Where's the far right want the money to go? Where do you want the money to go? Because I think a lot of people are sitting there going, right, this is our tax dollars, what are we going to do with it?
So right. Yeah, no, it's a lot. And I think it's, you know, especially with the Mega Millions getting way up there over $1 billion, you know, everyone's kind of got their eyes thinking ahead to what we could do with those funds. But this isn't something where we have to, you know, win the lotto. We already have it. It's just a matter of what we, the people, want to do with it. So we've been asking the public. I've done that in a few different forums, putting it out there on social media to hear from my neighbors directly about where they'd like to see it go. And for the most part, you know, every once in a while you get a wild outside the box idea. But for the most part, people recognize, hey, you know, we should go and fund those things that we had said we need to tighten the belt on, and saying, oh gosh, we can't afford this because of the economy for the last, you know, 10, 15 years. So that includes making sure we restore funds to K-12 education. If you actually go back and look, if we actually kept pace with inflation of where the per pupil funding was, 15 years ago, once the first recession hit, when the housing bubble burst, we would have to increase the per pupil funds across the board by $3,000, right? That's not just for urban districts or just rural districts. That's across the board to make sure we just kept pace with inflation because of the cuts and things that have happened between there. So if you look at that, that's the first thing we should be doing. Making sure we're funding special ed, matching it the same dollar amount that voucher schools get for special ed. Otherwise, local school districts have to make up the difference. So that's a big chunk of it, making sure that healthcare is more affordable, making sure that we're doing once in a generation infrastructure changes that sometimes require local match, being able to have the state come in and do those matches for folks to expand infrastructure at the local level would have a huge amplifying effect. But even after that, right, then we can look at something like a tax cut or doing something long-term that actually, you know, will rally folks and maybe find some Republican votes along the way.
So what are the Republicans in the Senate, what are they thinking on these issues? What do they say about spending the money on education?
Yeah, I think they say they want to get something out of it, right? Whether that be, you know, giving more subsidies for people who send their kids to private education is the one that comes to the top. They usually call it, you know, school choice, but really what that is, when you expand school choice, it usually just gives a subsidy to people who already send their kids to private schools. Last time they expanded it, it was over 72% of the kids that were getting a taxpayer-funded voucher or taxpayer-funded money, they were already sending their kids there. So that's something that they're looking at. And then, of course, the other thing is they want to give more money for rich people. You know, it never quite trickles down, this in trickle-down economics. It's more, let's give more money to the top, and at some point in the future, maybe it'll get down to us. So that's where they want to do this, what they're calling a flat tax, which would just be a huge giveaway to people who are rich and paying the highest amount because they're making the most. The rest of us would probably not see a break, and if anything, it would end up freezing the system in a way that would underfund K-12 education, underfund the universities, underfund roads and infrastructure, underfund public services and shared revenue. Which I know you know what it means, but shared revenue is the funds that goes to the state, and then it's supposed to be shared out. It would cut all of those things once, you know, we hit the recession, which, frankly, most economists are saying we're going to see in the next year or two.
So before we get into some of the specifics, shared revenue, I want to go back to this sort of the beginning starting point, this notion of a flat tax, because it did come up in the last governor's election, right? And
yep.
But I'm going to date myself a little bit here. I was a steel worker from 1976 to 1984 in Indiana, right? So I was a union rep. I worked swing shift around the clock. This is, you know, big steel, inland steel. Mm-hmm. But even back then, this disparity on the income gap hadn't even got close to where it is today, or the, you know, the gap between the very, very wealthy and average folks that are just working. And I remember discussions I had when we first talked about the Reagan and Reagan's taxes with my fellow steelworkers, right? When they started talking about, let's do tax breaks, I would talk to them about, you know, Eisenhower was a very conservative Republican, a general, helped mm-hmm. us win World War II. But they taxed the wealthy at 90%, and the wealthy were still always the richest people in America. But they did help create a vibrant middle class in the 50s and 60s that created this public school system and our highway system. And I mean, really created the infrastructure for a middle class to survive. Why is it that we can have Republicans talk about a flat tax where the very, very mega wealthy don't pay a penny? They're not carrying any weight in this. How is that possible in today's world?
Right. No, I think that there's a collective amnesia by both, unfortunately, the media and by those that are running circles around them. I mean, you talked about where we were back in Reagan and what things were like under Eisenhower and those tax rates, but there's been a steady decline in what the rich have paid, which is why you have these monstrous discrepancies in what the rich have and what the poorest and frankly what the middle class have. And that's just because of the way it's not, you know, any new brilliance or any new inventions. It's mostly just financial maneuvering by their on their behalf of spending money to try and get more elected officials who will then give them more tax breaks, right? And I could bore your ears off where we go over, you know, how they after 9/11 they did the Bush tax cuts that benefited the rich long term. They did capital gains deferral in 2011 here in Wisconsin. They did Act 10, which ended up costing working class folks across our state, where they had to pay more for what they had, and that did not benefit them, did not benefit most of us. At the same time, they did something called the Manufacturing and Agriculture Tax Credit, which basically wiped away the liability of most big manufacturing and agriculture mega ag in our state, so that the rest of us would have to pick up the tab. On top of that, I mentioned the vouchers where they give the tuition deduction, and they gave the voucher expansion. They did an income tax cut by reducing the brackets back in 2013. This continued on, of course, and then at the federal level, they did the only big thing that Donald Trump did. The only signature piece of legislation he ever passed was the Trump tax cuts that benefited the rich to the point where it jacked up the federal deficit, and only the richest benefited of it. So all of that, of course, is something that has only benefited them, and now they're coming back to the trough and saying, you know, all of those tax breaks sure are nice. We sure could use some more tax breaks. Well, the rest of us, you know, we've seen what does that look like. That means there's less funds for schools, that's less funds for roads, less funds for medical advancements. You know, people can still go bankrupt if they get the wrong diagnosis at a doctor because we have not, we don't have a healthcare system. We have a system that preys on the sick and the feeble. All the things that we could have as a shared society and a functioning democracy, we don't have because the rich people want more, you know, and look at what they're spending it on. If they're not spending it on lobbyists, they're spending it on rockets that go to barely space. They're spending it on tax havens. They're spending it on risky financial instruments. And we're not doing better as a result of it. So I think we should be investing that directly in people. And frankly, we shouldn't engage with even flirting with the idea of giving another tax cut for the rich while people are suffering so much and poverty is continuing to climb.
You know, I think the it isn't just a boring list. I mean, that was, frankly, thank you for sharing that summary of the giveaways. And the reason I asked that is because you made this comment that the Republican leadership in the Senate want to get something.
Right.
And I, you know, the get is, you know, frankly, individually, they're not getting the break. They're delivering for someone else. Because clearly, you know, when you're talking about the wealthy, I mean, it's, as far as I know, we don't have a state senator that has their own space rocket. But hey, folks,
not yet.
Attorney Mark Thompson. I am here with State Senator Chris Larson. We'll be back after the break to talk more about what's happening in Madison as we go forward. Be right back. Welcome back, folks. The attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night, 7 to 8, WAUK, 540 AM, 101 FM. And I am here tonight with Senator Chris Larson. Before the break, we were talking about the $6.5 billion surplus that has to be decided or allocated in Madison. And touched on the fact that there's some Republicans that want to go to a flat tax, which just means giving away more money to the folks that don't need tax breaks, the very, very mega wealthy. But let's talk about the opportunities in terms of public education. What could the money really go to? Senator,
yeah.
It's up to you.
Yeah. For sure. As I mentioned, if we actually kept pace with inflation, per pupil across the board would be $3,000 per pupil more. I don't think that that's going to be what comes through. I think there's going to be an effort to get something higher to try and match that for our schools. And this is a crisis mode. And I think that most, and I think I can say this, but most schools probably won't, right? And the reason is because they want to put up a good front. But the fact is that we're losing good teachers. They're getting poached, right? And moving district to district. Those that are the most mobile are getting the most out of it, which is not the way that it should be. We should end up investing in teachers to be invested in kids long term. And this is hurting not just urban areas, but rural areas as well, where they are seeing a decline in enrollment, where there is risk of some of these school districts shutting down. So by making sure that we are putting those funds forward, increasing the per pupil across the board so that everyone benefits, I mean, that's a huge investment for them. And also making sure that we're bumping up the commitment to special ed. Public schools end up having a higher proportion of students who need special education. If the state is not funding them in the commitment that they're supposed to, then those funds have to come out of the local coffers. So that's something that absolutely needs to happen. The state can fund it. We are lesser if we don't do it. And this is, you know, I think of some pretty great quotes, right? If you don't fund education, you're funding ignorance, right? Or I think of a post that I put up on a quote from a speech that Kennedy gave in Nashville, Tennessee, where he talked about the folks who try to shake their fists at intellectualism and those who are looking to better themselves and to explore science and explore the unknown and, you know, shoot for the moon as he did. And the quote that I posted is, only an educated and informed people will be a free people. And that is foundational for our democracy. We've seen the results of what happens when people are fed ignorance. They'll eat it, they'll follow it, and it leads to the decay of our democracy. So not to be too hyperbolic, but I think if we are not investing in the next generation, we are investing in the failure of our state.
So let me, you know, I noticed there were so many referendums by municipalities to raise money for schools.
Yeah. So,
that seemed to me a sign of the stress that the current Republican majority in Madison has put on municipalities. And not just Milwaukee, right? I live in Milwaukee. You represent part of Milwaukee, but you represent Cudahy, Oak Creek, St. Francis, South Milwaukee, and parts of Franklin, right? Parts of those. So am I reading it right? Or, I mean, do we have communities under stress?
Yes. I mean, it's a, to put it succinctly, but if you want the details back, this last election, I believe it was over 90 different referendums were on the ballot for a total of $2.2 billion. Right. 85% of those passed. So if you think about those in terms of the dollar amounts, right, we talk about, oh, we have this, you know, it's approaching $7 billion in an overall surplus. You don't really have that extra money if you are underfunding your kids, right? It's like talking about taking a grand worldwide vacation while your kids don't have books and are not able to get a basic level of education. And this isn't a one-off. We've seen the number of referendums go up. Back in 2020, in the April cycle, there's 57 school referendums totaling $1.73 billion, 91% of those passed. And so this is a continued crisis because that is the only means that they have to be able to raise revenue because the state continues to say, tighten your belts or punish them, right? In light of historic problems, in light of learning loss that was well recorded, and in light of the federal government, Joe Biden and the Democrats trying to put forward money that would flow to make sure that schools would not be would be able to survive through the pandemic, Republicans used that and passed a historic double zero, which was $0 per pupil increase in the first fiscal year and then $0 per pupil increase in the next fiscal year, basically guaranteeing that schools would fall further behind, that students would fall further behind. And so when the test scores show that, when school scores show that, instead of saying, you know, yeah, this is business, you don't invest, this is what you get. Unfortunately, they're using that as an excuse to continue defunding public education and trying to punish them, which, you know, I get that school funding can be confusing, it can be hard to follow. But if you think about it in terms of a family, if you have a child that's struggling, you know, you can't punish them into learning more. You can't just say, well, we're just going to keep you in your room until you figure out how to learn how to read, learn arithmetic, and can figure out how to do all the things that we need to do in a society. You have to invest more time as a parent. You have to invest more time, maybe pay for a tutor to make sure that they're caught up and that they're functioning. As a state, we unfortunately have been doing the opposite of just punishing. Now they don't have the excuse of saying we need to tighten our belt because we don't have funds. They can't walk around like the Monopoly man with their pockets turned inside out with the same time as they're saying we're going to give tax cuts to the rich. We've got the funds to invest in our kids, and that's something we absolutely need to do.
Thank you, Senator Larson. Look, folks, coming up on another break, we're going to come back with more from Chris Larson. I'll just a public disclaimer here. He is my senator. I did vote for him, so there is a bit of bias.
Oh, thanks, man.
This is Attorney Mark Thompson at the Paul Revere Show, WAUK 540 AM. We'll be right back. Hello, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here at WAUK 540 AM 101 FM every Monday night, 7 to 8, talking about how to move democracy forward, how to move the state of Wisconsin forward. My guest this evening is Senator Chris Larson. Hello again, Chris. And we were talking before the break about some of the issues that are coming up in Madison with the $6.5 billion surplus and how that's going to be divided up. And we talked a little bit about this flat tax, but there's also been a lot of discussion about local sales tax, shared revenue. How do these issues play out? How are they politically teed up? And what are the Republicans doing and what are the Democrats doing on these issues?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we will see. There's a lot of discussions right now about what's going to happen with shared revenue. And again, you know, for listeners, this is a deal that happened back 40 years ago, or actually beyond that, when the collection of income tax first started in the state, they said, well, the state will collect income tax to prevent local communities from doing their own. And so they've been prevented from doing that. And the idea was once the money comes in, then it will be distributed out to local communities. So the state would be the pass-through. And for the most part, you know, back when this first started, 90% flowed through and went back to the local communities. State just, you know, had a very, very small role in it. Local communities closest to the people is what was doing it. That has shifted. That has shifted tremendously in a lot of ways, and I won't bore you with all the details. But frankly, it really shifted 12 years ago when Scott Walker became governor and the Republicans took over, and they decided that they were going to restrict local governments from being able to fund services, even if they are local elected officials who neighbors put into office to make their decisions for them. Wanted to be able to increase taxes to fund things, you know, like civic projects or improvements to their roads or getting rid of lead pipes or, you know, you name it, or having more parks, right, more walkways. All these things were, this was restricted to the point where only communities can only raise revenue to the point of new growth or inflation. And that was it. So it was punishing those cities that had grown or communities that had already were already pretty big. And then they've said, oh, we'll make up the rest in shared revenue. That sure as heck hasn't happened. What you've seen, and I already mentioned the referendums, we've seen referendums increase across the state by local communities trying to make it up just to have operating funds to be able to hire police, hire fire, you know, be able to have public safety, much less all the other things that they do. So they've started to figure out that they're not getting their shared revenue. So there is a movement afoot to try and figure out local revenue or to be able to get something, right? Whether that be an increase in a 1% sales tax or using 1% of what the state already collects and giving it directly to local communities. You know, how that will be distributed, that would basically pretty close to double the amount of revenue that they're getting in shared revenue. But the details are still being worked out on all of this. It would be, I do think that as much as, you know, Republicans, we haven't mentioned it, but Republicans have very much gerrymandered themselves being into power, regardless of how voters feel about them. At the local government level, it's all nonpartisan. So it should not be painted with a partisan brush. And a lot of these folks, while they might be Republican, they might be Democrat, they might be independent, they're struggling and they're having to explain to their neighbors why the state is not giving their funds. And I think they have a lot of power to be able to say, hey, you give us the power to be able to do this. If you're refusing to give us the funds, you're strangling our communities. You're preventing growth, right? You're making it harder to bring, to grow, to bring and keep young people in the community. And that's what's at stake. So those are all the negotiations and things that are happening in a fever pitch. Between the towns, between the municipalities, between the counties, and frankly, between the school districts, to say the state should stop, being a de facto caretaker, pretending that local communities can't figure this stuff out for themselves, and frankly, treat them like adults and let them to be able to thrive.
So you mentioned a lot of these communities are in, more red purple areas than blue purple areas. And I use that because the Wisconsin is a purple state in my mind. I mean, that's why we're a swing state, right? I mean, that's why the whole world press shows up in Wisconsin on big elections, because it's a close call.
Right.
So, I mean, a lot of these communities that are getting squeezed are in more red purple areas. How do you see that playing out with the far right Republican leadership in Madison? How's that going to play out?
Yeah, you're right. I think for a while now, they've been isolated purposefully, right? Where, if they're in their rural community, they're not in contact with lots of other rural communities regularly. And so I think a lot of it, there's a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of mentality, right? Essentially saying, well, we can make it work. We can make it work. We'll be strong. But now that this has been going on for 12 years, and especially at a time where, frankly, Republicans are going around beating their chests and saying, look at all this huge surplus. We're going to give another huge tax cut to the rich. Local communities are saying, wait, you've been telling us to tighten our belts and have been lording over us for a decade plus. And we've had to go to referendum after referendum, and you're saying our books aren't balancing. It's time to make sure that those funds actually come here. And I think that there's a real effort for those, to take a lesson. You mentioned your background as a steel worker, to take a lesson from unions, to be able to band together and say, look, we all demand better. All of these local communities, all of these rural communities across the state deserve better, right? You may be able to treat one in a bad way and expect to get away with it. But if you're doing that to all of them, as they've been doing, I think that there is a sense that, wait a second, you may say you're looking out for us, but the spreadsheet isn't saying that. The dollars and cents aren't showing it. And communities are struggling, right? They're seeing it in shrinking class sizes. They're seeing it in shrinking populations. They're seeing it in roads that are falling apart. And frankly, they're seeing it in terms of more of our dairy farms continuing to shut down in the state, Republicans refusing to do anything about it. So when it comes to and rural, not to mention rural broadband and access to the digital future, all of these things, they're getting a little bit frustrated. And I think if they realize this is not a partisan thing, that this is something where in a bipartisan, shouldn't be a partisan thing, where Tony Evers should be able to come through and work with Republicans to get something done. But, if Republicans are going to choose the wealthy and choose what they call the flat tax over giving them what they deserve, then they're not going to get it. They're never going to get it.
Yeah, I mean, then they'll just continue to starve communities and starve our kids. Let me ask, in terms of, because you said this is all going to be coming at the public very quickly. For people that are listening that want to try to watch this shell game, what should we be watching? What should we be looking at? The budget or, what? What should we be paying attention to?
Yeah, I mean, we're a month out from when the budget's going to come out. So we do have what's called the State of the State. I think most people are probably familiar with the State of the Union. But we've got State of the State, which is happening in just 2 weeks on the 24th. So in that, that's usually a chance for the governor to preview some of the things that he's going to be coming out with. And then uh, just I think it's just a couple, 1 week after, 2 weeks after, one week before the election, the primary for Supreme Court, the day after Valentine's Day, we'll have the budget address. And the governor will come out with his proposal. So all that will be coming out over the next few weeks. But there's, you know, watch the papers. This is where all the discussions, all the trial balloons start getting floated.
The have you seen just yourself early on any of the trial balloons that are being floated?
Yeah, I mean, some are good, some are bad. You know, I think that I already gave you the broadest outline of where things are. And I think it's just a matter of political positioning of what's going to come out at the very end of all of this.
So you touched on the fact that we have a primary on February 21st,
right,
for the municipal elections, judges, and the biggest race out there is the state Supreme Court race. I want to focus that on when we come back on the break, but teeing up to that, we do have this tight timeline, mm-hmm. right? We have February 21st is the primary, and then April 4th is the election, which is supposed to be nonpartisan. You mentioned these municipal offices are nonpartisan, but people are really electing school boards, right?
Right.
We're electing all the people that are going to be making these decisions. Have you got a sense from your, you know, you're in a lot of different communities, what the debates are locally on some of those races and what are the key issues, if not the budget, or, you know, how's that? What do you see as sort of the hot issues for municipal elections, setting aside the Supreme Court race?
Right. Yeah. Outside of the Supreme Court race, which I think we're going to talk about separately.
Yeah.
I mean, at the school board level, right, this is where the rubber meets the road. And I think what's interesting is there was a big swing and a miss by, you know, Rebecca Clayfish and those around her who were trying to say, let's go after our schools and talk about things that weren't even being taught there, and trying to get people worked up in a tizzy, talking about CRT and all these things that weren't actually happening. And there's a realization: wait a second, you know, there is a universal frustration with how the pandemic played out. But as frustrating as it is, there's nobody to blame, right? This is something we went through as a species, as an entire planet. And you can't use that as a Trojan horse to try and get in some people who are going to destroy public education. So time and again, a lot of those people ended up swinging and missing and not getting into office. So now there's a recognition of, well, let's actually get out of schools what we want, right? Which is, what can you do to shrink class sizes, make sure that students have the attention that they deserve, making sure that they have the teachers that are paid enough to make sure that they can turn around and give the attention to those kids that they need to thrive. These are the things that people talk about at the local level. And of course, at the judicial level, right, even at the municipal and the county level, where all those judges are up across the state, there's a recognition that the courts overstepped their bounds last summer, right? And it might not be that abortion cases are hitting municipal level or hitting the circuit court, but this is front of mind, because suddenly a fundamental right that we had assumed was not going to be stripped away was pulled out from underneath people after 49 years because of the ideology of people who were in judges' robes but acted as politicians. So I think there's a recognition that there's a lot of judges out there who may try and, you know, hide behind a robe, but in reality, they're wearing political stripes underneath it. So I think there's a big distrust, and people are asking a lot harder questions of the judicial candidates that I've talked to. But you'd have a sense of it too. I think you're no stranger to courtrooms.
Fair enough. So the before we go to the break, part of the, and we'll be tight here, right? We have the governor and his appointees and you got 30 seconds to answer this. The Republicans in the Senate didn't confirm the governor's appointees. What's going to happen this time around?
Ten seconds. I think Republicans know they have to at least do show hearings and give a few of them a vote. But it's on us to hold them accountable and trying to push the better ones through.
Folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. I am here with Senator Chris Larson. We will be back on the other side of the break. This is The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, Forward, Wisconsin. We will be back on the other side. Welcome back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw, WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM. I am here with Senator Chris Larson, and we're talking about how to move Wisconsin forward. And we have these elections coming up in the spring, and we have the newly seated Senate Assembly, new governor, lieutenant governor, and we're coming into a big election in April for a Supreme Court spot. It's a swing spot that's going to be addressing key issues, right? I mean, you've talked about gerrymandered and how we've come, the Republicans have virtually locked up control in the Senate and the Assembly because they've rigged the maps despite the fact that the state votes, you know, much, much bluer purple. It's got to be pretty red purple, you know, to have a vote in Madison currently and for the last decade. So before we get into the Supreme Court race, you know, there is a race, a special race for the What is it? The 8th district?
Yep.
So there is an attorney, Jody Havish Sinkin, right? I think that I pronounced that right. She's running for Senator Alberta Darling's spot, who is no longer there. And the key on that is that's really sort of very important for the Senate, right? So tell the listeners, why is that race sort of really important for everybody and whether you live in the district or not?
Yeah, I mean, this is huge. Right now, after the election happened, and I think it's worth mentioning, and I'm glad you brought it up, that we ended up, even though we are a 50-50 state, right, the closest U.S. Senate election in the history of U.S. Senate elections in our state, right? The 100 years since we've elected them. And then, of course, beyond that, you know, the governor's race coming down to the wire again, although Evers won by a larger margin than he did 4 years ago, still very close. Right. But even in that 50-50 state, nowhere was there any discussion or even chance that there was going to be a chance that Democrats would take the Assembly or the Senate. And that's completely because of the rigging of the system through map drawing by Republicans, where they invented a whole thing, which, you know, we could spend the rest of the time talking about, but we won't. But regardless of that, there's a chance, and the real thing to know of it is that the state Supreme Court is the one that intervened and accepted the Republicans' invented artificial creation of saying, oh, we have to keep as many districts as close to what they are as they were, which is completely invented. There's nothing like that in the state. There's nothing like that in the country, right? In fact, we encourage change to make sure that it's adjusted. And frankly, its incumbency should not matter, right? It should be up to the people.
Let me just throw in as a lawyer here, right? For the public listening, this issue of the constitutionality of partisan gerrymandering went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court said, look, we're not going to intervene. We're going to let state Supreme Court states decide the issue, right? Because there had been a decision out of Wisconsin that said the maps in Wisconsin were unconstitutional under federal law, meaning the rules of elections were so unfair, this wasn't a democracy, right? So, I mean, the people need to know that. Our current maps, a federal court made up of Republicans and Democrats had said it was unconstitutional because it's not fair, because the people, even if you vote blue, you can never have a blue assembly or a blue Senate. So,
right. Right. And as frustrating as it is, it's the alternative is to say, oh, gosh, well, I guess we could never change it. The other alternative is to fight and say, OK, we have to work harder than ever to make sure that we actually do have a functioning democracy again in Wisconsin. And with the state Supreme Court, right, that election is happening the same day. We'll get into that. But this is actually there is trends, right, that are happening where because of the increased extremism by Republicans of embracing, you know, this proto-fascism of overturning election results, of not allowing people to actually have equal say in a democracy, and because of this tendency to just favor the rich, there's more and more people who are shifting and recognizing this, right? The extinguishment of rights of women to be able to have control over their reproductive future. This has gotten more and more people to shift. So this is a district, you know, forgive most listeners if they didn't memorize the state Senate map, but the 8th, it's area north, the north suburbs of Milwaukee, and the area north of that. And that is a district that has trended further and further. In fact, there was one of the only Democrats to win a red seat over the last 10 years was Deb Andraca, who's a state rep in that district. And the rest is continuing to shift. Jody Habish-Sinikin is an amazing candidate, right? She comes from the Habish family, so folks know that name. But she is somebody who's earned her stripes as somebody who's an environmental lawyer. She is somebody who's been active in causes. She very firmly believes in reproductive freedom for everybody. And as a mother, as somebody who's prioritizing good education for all of our kids. She is somebody who's a leader in her community, and she is a great, she's going about this as a happy warrior, somebody who's plugging away at the phones, getting out there on doors, and is somebody, you know, this is a district that Tony Evers lost by a small margin, but we have been able to show when people work together, they work hard and they know the facts, they're able to win these special elections. We've done it before in the 10th, and this is one we absolutely can win with people's help.
We can win it and help Tony help protect his vetoes. So,
right. Right. Yeah. Right now, this is the seat that will determine if the state Senate has a veto proof majority or if it's one where it's going to be a little bit closer.
Right. So, folks, that's tied up then with this, as Senator Larson said, the Supreme Court race, where that swing vote will decide these issues of gerrymandering,
yeah,
of abortion rights. So you have 30 seconds, Senator.
Yeah.
Sum up for the listeners why this race is a must register and must vote race.
Yeah. There's three justices on this court who said that it was all right that Donald Trump continue to try and push his wild conspiracies the last election cycle. 85 courts across the country said they don't have a case. This is one where it's going to be determined. So we have a chance to take it. We got to work hard to do it.
Folks, thank you, Senator Larson. Folks,
thank you, Mark.
Come on back next Monday night. Paul Revere Show, where we're talking about how to move Wisconsin forward. See you next week.